Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.
Coming up on the Mark Divine Show.
So there's brain imaging scans where you can see kind of a normal brain and then a brain on psilocybin. And you can see it's just really lit up. When your brain lights up like this, you're able to think in ways that you don't normally think. And that can be incredibly freeing for people who are caught in loops. Loops of anxiety, loops of depression, loops of behavior.
Welcome to the Mark Divine Show. This is your host, Mark Divine. Thanks so much for joining me today as I explore what it means to be courageous by speaking to some of the world's most inspirational, fearless, and compassionate leaders, martial arts grandmasters, Navy SEALs, meditation monks, and even psychedelic experts like my guest today, Matt Zeman, who's dedicated to exploring the inner world of psychedelics and is a passionate advocate for the thoughtful and responsible use of them. He's got a master's of science in psychology and neuroscience of mental health with honors from King's College in London. And he's studied the effects of psychedelics on the mind and the potential for these experiences to serve as a catalyst for positive transformation. His work is motivated by a profound desire to help people navigate the challenging terrain of the psychedelic experience and to emerge from it with a deeper sense of purpose, connection, and understanding. He's also the author of bestseller Psychedelics for Everyone, A Beginner's Guide to These Powerful Medicines for Anxiety, Depression, Addiction, PTSD, and Expanding Consciousness. Before I get into the show, I wanted you to know that I'm opening up slots for our Unbeatable Coach Certification and our Unbeatable Team for 2024. The Unbeatable Team is an amazing year of transformational training. It's where I direct my full attention and time in coaching and training. I don't do it anywhere else. It's here in the Unbeatable Team that I can give my full attention to help those deeply committed to transforming to become uncommon in a world that you know is rapidly collapsing into fear, moral relativism, and mediocrity. We meet virtually every month as a team, come together four times during the year for 3 days of powerful in-person training and practice, and I'm here to help you break through any barriers and to crush all of your goals for 2024. So if you're ready to go deep with me and willing to do the work, I can guarantee amazing strides will be made. Go to unbeatableteam.com and unbeatablecoaching.com to learn more about these unbeatable events. Now, back to the show. Matt, thanks so much for joining me today on the Mark Divine Show. Stoked to have you here, buddy.
Mark, psyched to be here. Thanks for bringing me on.
Your primary interest is the healing, transformational power of psychedelics, and something that I've experimented with because of my veteran status, and both at a personal level to be like preventative maintenance, you know, thinking about like what we're learning about traumatic brain injury, TBI, and some of the potential catastrophic effects if you don't address that. And now they're seeing that many SEALs, special operators, Marines, you know, with the constant hammering of their brain through even just firearms training, through jumping, through explosives, through combat, there's not a single one of us who doesn't have some level of TBI, in my opinion, you know, and that's not a medical statement, that's an opinion, but geez, just think about it, right? You know, an average SEAL platoon would fire more rounds than the entire Marine Corps, and we'd use these silly little, you know, like rubber earplugs that did nothing. In fact, there's a big lawsuit against that company because they did nothing. But, you know, TBI and trauma leads to symptoms of depression, anxiety, you know, loss of motivation, mood disorders, right? And so people come and say, well, I fixed my mood disorder. Okay, psychedelics can help with that, but it also can be a gateway into greater healing, right, for traumatic brain injuries that are often accompanying with those issues, right, or accompanied by those issues. So it's an important conversation. So let's bring back to you. What's your origin story, Matt? I mean, where are you from? And like, give us a little bit of the journey that got you to, you know, deeply into this work.
I'll give the journey, but first, I mean, just thank you for normalizing this conversation, Mark. I mean, you're an everyday person. And when you bring up conversations like this, I think it makes other people feel it's okay to talk about things like mental health, like traumatic brain injury, like depression, like anxiety, like psychedelic use, like antidepressants aren't working, those types of things. So I think it's important that you're doing this, and I appreciate you doing this.
Yeah, thank you. I agree. What's going on in the world, and especially in this country, is insane how many people are suffering from emotional and mental trauma, and it's being layered upon, right? The thing about the Israeli community right now just gets trauma, just layered upon trauma, generational trauma, and now it's getting triggered again with what's going on in Israel. You have to deal with that, right? And in order to deal with it, you have to have conversations about it. And you have to admit that you're not wrong or weak for being traumatized. That's just part of being human. In fact, it comes with the freaking basic operating instructions of being human. You will be traumatized. And part of the whole human journey is to learn how to deal with it so you can grow and evolve.
And I don't need to compare my trauma to your trauma or anybody else's. It's my trauma.
Right. There's no ranking system, no leaderboard in trauma.
Exactly.
So that, what about you? What's your story?
I came about here in a roundabout way. I was a non-drug user. I really had no drug experience. I wasn't a big drinker. Just an entrepreneur. And some friends invited me to do a guided magic mushroom journey. And I was reluctant.
By the way, I don't like to refer to psychedelics as drugs because I don't think they are. A drug is something that's manufactured, unless you want to put like lysergic acid in that category. It's manufactured by man. But a mushroom is grown by Mother Earth.
Tank fence and ayahuasca and iboga, sure, absolutely.
Ayahuasca is grown by Mother Earth, and ibogaine, same thing. It's a bark.
Sticking on that for a second, just because it's fun to have someone who knows what they're talking about. We get into an argument over the separateness of nature. So when we start talking about MDMA or LSD or ketamine, yes, they are synthetic, but then they're also made by nature if we consider ourselves part of nature. So
true.
It's
that's right.
Yeah, we can go round and round on that.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I would sustain that argument. But like if you said, okay, here's a list, and you had Mother Nature here and then produced by man over here.
Sure.
I would choose Mother Nature. Not to say there aren't benefits for pharmacological produced things. There are, but we don't understand all the interdependencies and you know the complexity of the whole system the way Gaia does. There are consequences if you're not careful.
I was sticking with this for a second. Psilocybin mushrooms grow in every continent except Antarctica, and we have shaman in Siberia and tribal leaders in Africa using different psychedelics. I mean, the Mother Nature has produced these compounds, these medicines for thousands and thousands of years. Yeah, and we just, as a Western society, we have turned away from them for the last at least 50 years, but arguably longer than that. And there's a lot here for us if we allow ourselves to move into
it. You know, I have my theories on that, but they quickly probably spiral into kind of like territory that we shouldn't go on in a podcast, but it'd be fun to talk about, get your perspective. Let me come back maybe a little later. It's like, why? Like, why were they shut down in the 60s? I think they were a threat, major threat to the establishment, right? The fact that people were waking up all over the place and basically finding that they're not disconnected and don't need to be fearful victims and cogs in this consumer machine, right? And so they're literally about ready to throw off all that shit. And psychedelics were one way avenue to shut that down. So was war. Anyways, there's a lot more that goes on behind the scenes that people are ever willing to admit or to even allow.
Well, and you got to see some of the behind the scenes in your previous career. You know more than most about what goes on behind the scenes. And there's other layers behind that.
There's layers upon layers. Yep. So back to you, your entrepreneurship.
All right. Entrepreneur, got invited to do this guided mushroom journey. I did it. And completely changed the way I look and interact with the world. In this first journey, I reconnected with my mom, who died when I was 22. She was 49.
What did that look like to you? You mean you emotionally felt her, or did you?
Oh my God, it was so beautiful. I could feel her next to me, and I could almost pull like a cord from her to me to my children and realize that we are all connected and that she's not gone, that she's just in this other space. And I mean, I gave up on any type of faith, any type of I just kind of went on living after she died, but missed her. And this was after, we're talking more than 30 years, or almost 30 years. And it's like, wow, okay. I can see that there's another thing here. This is amazing. And I felt so safe and loved in that experience and then realized, oh my goodness, I don't feel safe and loved in my everyday life. And what's going on with that? I realized I was scared of dying. I realized I was scared of being poor and making some of the same mistakes my alcoholic father made and towards the end of his life, insight after insight. So I ended up within weeks had someone else running my business. And within months, I was back in school to get a master's in psychology and neuroscience of mental health, focused on psychedelic medicine, and then also traveling around, trying a number of different psychedelic medicines with different types of facilitators, from shaman and taitas to MDs and PhDs, and learning about different philosophies and how these things worked. And all of that brought me forward to today with a couple books, a book called Psychedelics for Everyone, and then a journal for preparation and integration called Beyond the Trip, and doing everything I can kind of to help the safe and sacred practice is what I'm mostly interested in with psychedelic medicine, or entheogens, I would actually call them, since I believe that they're for connecting to a higher power, to the power within.
Could you just give me a perspective on what you think is happening with a medicine, or what do you call it, an entheogen?
Entheogen, sure.
Entheogen, yeah, like fill you with spirit.
Exactly.
What's happening? I mean, what's going on biochemically, neurologically, spiritually? I know it might be different, but let's talk about in a general sense. I know that each one has a different kind of experience.
In general sense, the first thing that these psychedelic medicines do is they quiet down what's called is your default mode network. So think of that as that inner narrator that's constantly saying, you're not enough, you're not worthy, you need to do more. So it quiets that down. That feels like the weight of the world is lifted off your shoulders.
And how does it do that?
The chemicals, that's kind of what the medicine does. So I can't explain more than that, but it does. That's the part of the brain that gets quieted down. It allows neurons then to fire that haven't fired in a long time. So there's brain imaging scans where you can see kind of a normal brain and then a brain on psilocybin. And you can see it's just really lit up. The importance of that piece, so now you have the anxiety lifted off your shoulders in the first piece. And now you have these neurons firing together that don't normally. This is like, as we get older, we start getting into repetitive thinking patterns. Well, when your brain lights up like this, you're able to think in ways that you don't normally think. And that can be incredibly freeing for people who are caught in loops of anxiety, loops of depression, loops of behavior.
I've heard that psilocybin, it's like even a single experience can neuroplastically change your brain forever.
Yeah. Ketamine can do the same thing. And then you enter into the state of neuroplasticity following the medicine, where you can then implement behavioral change or whatever else is important to you based on the lessons from there. Many people feel a connectedness to something else. It could be the higher power, it can be the interconnectedness of all things, but you don't feel alone. And for a lot of people, that is a lovely thing to remember, that you're not alone, that we are part of this existence, and that we are part of nature, we are part of humanity, and we're not alone. Especially things like MDMA, you turn off things like shame, blame, and guilt. So you're able then to look back at previous experiences without becoming defensive and just be like, okay, that was my role in this and that happened. And that's not me. It's just something that happened to me or by me. And now I'm going to move on with that knowledge. And that can also be freeing. And we're seeing that with the veterans with the treatment-resistant post-traumatic stress disorder studies with MDMA, where they're giving them 3 sessions of MDMA and therapy on both sides. And 67% are emerging without a PTSD diagnosis, 88% with a clinically significant improvement in symptoms. Pretty amazing.
So 4 really, really interesting and important outcomes. And, you know, this can accrue with like a single experiment, but, you know, like with the MDMA, generally speaking, like some sort of process is involved, right? And so I think this is one of the areas let's keep it general. Again, not talking about any specific, you know, medicine. Like generally speaking, what I'm seeing today is a little bit of a disregard, not a total disregard, but not a complete regard for the entire process or the journey or the experience, a curated experience of like preparation for the actual experience of the psychedelics, maybe a multi-mode experience, like, you know, what we were talking about earlier with the mission within, like you do this and then you process and then do that and then you process and then you do this, right? Or like with the MDMA, a multi-day thing. So it's a journey where you're getting progressively deeper in with the medicine. And then the post-work integration and behavioral modifications, right? That's a lot of work and something not to be taken lightly, right? But I see a lot of these things popping up that really shortchange some of that. And it concerns me. What are your views on this?
Yeah, I think this is really interesting, Mark. This happens both in the legal, medical, psychedelic world, and in the underground ceremonial psychedelic world. So the questions that the consumer or the participant needs to ask are really the same. And the questions start with, how are you going to prepare me to receive this medicine? Is there going to be an intention setting process? Is there some type of dialogue in advance? And then moves us into what's going to happen during the ceremony or the medical treatment. Who's going to be delivering the medicine? What's the room going to be like? Is there going to be music? Do I have to bring my own? Am I wearing a mask? What's the setting? Who's going to be with me in the room? And then followed by what happens after the medicine? Do we have any type of integration process? And is there any type of community that I can fall into in wherever I live that I can talk to and share these experiences with? There are medical providers doing legal ketamine that are just giving an IV into your arm, sending you on your way. And there are others that are doing all of the things I just talked about. There are spiritual providers that are just offering it as a service. Come do your service and off you go. And there's others that are doing everything I just talked about. And it's really up to us as participants and people seeking our own firm ground to ask the questions and find the provider that's right for us.
So Ramana Maharshi, you know, was a famous yogi. And I think it was Ram Dass and a bunch of Americans, you know, had gone and visited him, and they brought him LSD once. And so he took a dose and he took another. Literally, they gave him like 8 doses. He just, you know, just sitting there watching them. And suddenly his eyes light up and he looks at him and goes, oh, I see. He goes, you want to feel powerful. It was a warning, right? Because psychedelics are good for an opening. But as a practice, he was warning that the ego will co-opt it. Ego will co-opt the experience and make you feel powerful. You know, that points to a lot of the spiritual bypassing that's happening in the psychedelic community. I want to get your take on that. Like, how do we know if like someone is legitimately a shaman or someone who's just done spiritual bypass because they had some fantastical experience with psychedelics and now they're all agog about it?
So I'm going to answer from my opinion only. I believe when you do this work, you're remembering how powerful you are, that you are loved, that you are worthy, that you are enough, and that it's not what you do. It's that on the inside, that you don't need anything on the external side to give you validation. So because I believe that, the role of the shaman or taita or facilitator is to keep me safe. It is to be able to support me as I do this work myself. But if I have a powerful experience, I did that. If I don't have a powerful experience, I did that. I don't want to put a shaman or a taita or a facilitator on a pedestal and make them like they're not God. They're spiritual peers. They just have a different knowledge base and a way of, and they know how to serve and deliver this medicine in a way that is powerful. I want to hand back that agency back to the individual participant.
Find the power in source, you know, God, the mighty I am spirit, as opposed to the ego.
Yeah.
I think that's one of the most valuable things from medicines like this is they help, just like meditation does, to begin to dissolve or soften that ego, that identification that's always grasping for, you know, needing to be special, and to begin to relax into the openness of that ground of reality, right, that we all are. And so that's what dissolves the separation, is because you dissolve the ego identity with the separate body-mind as a separate self and allow this heart-mind opening into the absolute. So psychedelics can be extremely potent because they give you this direct experience of that. Like 5-LeO-DMT, they call the God molecule, because like 15 minutes, you're there and then you're back with no side effects. And you're like, what the bleep just happened?
You're back with an experience that has no subject and object.
That's right. And you just have this experience that's inexplicable. You can't really put words to it. This is why they call them pointing out instructions. Just point. This is kind of somewhere the answer lies, but you try to frame it with words and you suddenly lose it. Fascinating. So let's stick with the dangers. Now, we talked about the danger of not preparing properly, the danger of the container, right? Like I had some friends who, you know, were hooked up with somebody to do an experience and was out in the desert. And when they told me about it and they showed me pictures, I was stunned. I was like, OMG. And of course they were too, but once they were in it, they really were like, ah. But like, it was awful. It was almost demonic looking in terms of the imagery they had, and it was just awful. I was like really grateful they got through that without any negative effects, but like really important to have the context and the container be like sacred space, prepared. This idea of having large groups of people doing it together, I'm not a fan of. You know, I've done that with 40 people, and you got someone just wailing in one corner because they're having their experience, emotional experience, which they weren't prepared for, and people getting up and all around. You know, I'm much more of inclined to suggest that a small group setting, 4 to 6 people would be ideal. But I want to hear your thoughts on this, right? About protecting the space and the ideal experience once you're there.
So source, set, and setting are the 3 most important things for people to keep in mind. Source is, where did your medicines come from and are they pure? So if you're not going in the medical route, do you trust your facilitator? If you've bought them in the market yourself, have you tested them? Set is your mindset. Do you have a clear intention? Do you know why you're there? Do you have an idea of how long the medicine is going to last? Are you well prepared for this journey? Do you have a medical intake? Do you know that someone's looked after you to make sure that you're not going to have a bad reaction with this medicine? That they've looked at your mental history, your physical history, your supplements, your prescriptions, and that you can feel confident that you're in a good place. And then your setting is all that physical environment. Who's there? What's the energy like? What's the music like? What are the disturbances like? What's the imagery like? You're highly suggestible in these non-ordinary states of consciousness. So if there is a dogma by the facilitators, do you know what that is? And do you agree with it? And are you okay with that? All things to ask before getting into a non-ordinary state of consciousness. With regards to the size, there's a large ayahuasca center in Costa Rica that does 100 people at a time. And they're very popular. That's just not the right one for me. There's other groups that do 40 people at a time. And again, they're popular. That's not the right one for me, but it might be for somebody else. I think anywhere between 10 and 20 is a great number. And I actually like that better than solos. And my logic is there's a shared energy in the room and releases move around from person to person. You get to understand how connected these medicines are. And then afterwards, I think when there's a decent amount of people, when you might share something that happened to you in your journey, and that might help me process something that happened to me on mine. And so I think having somewhere in that 10 to 20 range is a good number, but 6 is beautiful, 8's beautiful. Just for me, when you get into the 40s, 60s, 100, it feels like it's too much. But that's, again, personal opinion. In terms of safety, you brought that up. Besides iboga, which again, you started with, or ibogaine, that's the one that has a real cardiovascular risk, and people really, you do need to have a medical professional on site. It's a serious, serious medicine. On the other hand, if you have an opioid addiction, it's one of the few medicines out there that can help relieve that.
Yeah, that's incredible. Talk more about that. It's got a pretty high success rate for opioid. Yeah, people flat out gotten off of heroin after one experience with ibogaine.
Again, in our country, it's illegal, but there are gray clinics in Canada and in Mexico and Central America. But I don't know if we know of a better medicine for people who have an opioid dependence than ibogaine. So is it more risky than others? Absolutely. But if I had a child, a relative, a loved one with an opioid addiction, that's certainly where I would try. Again, when we talk about what's safe is probably not the right word. We can talk about risk reduced. There's 100 some overdoses on Tylenol every year in America. There is no overdose, known overdose for psilocybin or for mushrooms. So there are dangers to all of these medicines. There's particularly dangers to the chemical compounds, the non-named psychedelics that people buy in head shops that really are like research chemicals that have gotten out. Those, we don't really know what they do to humans. Highly, highly dangerous. When we talk about most psychedelics, we talk about mushrooms and LSD and MDMA and MDA or sassafras. The risk is pretty low compared to other drugs. There's a really beautiful study by Dr. David Nutt from Imperial College London, where he said, let's forget how drugs are classified and just look at harm to self and harm to others. And the number one harm to self, harm to others is alcohol. It's a 73. Heroin is like a 55. Mushrooms are a 6. LSD is a 7. MDMA is a 9. So that's not risk-free, but relative risk. If you, again, control source, set, and setting, the probability of having a bad, truly a bad experience is pretty low. You can have a challenging experience because lots have come up for you, but that's not the same as a bad physical or bad, truly bad mental experience.
Do you think there's any issue with tapping into astral energy or non-physical entities? The reason I bring this up is because I have a friend named Ben Greenfield who came out on a podcast last year with a guy named Josh Trent, and he was saying, don't do psychedelics because essentially, you know, unless the conditions are absolutely perfect and there's you know, you're able to set the energetic field up to protect, you're exposing yourself to negative astral energy or negative non-physical entities, which are, you know, trying to like c- connect with certain humans. Is that completely out of left field, that question, or is it something that is thought about? Or
I get it. I get where you're coming from. Again, this you get into really personal opinions here. I believe that we as a culture grow up in a scarcity mindset, and it's false. We are living in an abundant world. There's plenty for everybody, and that I'm in charge of my movie.
Yeah, I agree with that. If you don't want something in your show, you don't invite it, right?
Correct.
Or you reject it. But not everyone has that agency. I think that's what he was warning. Like, unless you have that agency and that autonomy and that clarity as a being to just thrust yourself into a psychedelic experience, you know, it could have that risk where you're going to have some energy come at you or attached to you.
Where that you could bring that energy up yourself.
That's right.
And so a couple things here. We get into, what do people want? I'm not telling anybody to do anything they don't want to do. If someone says, you know, I'm ready, I want to do this, and I'm not taking a prescription or a supplement or have a previous psychological reason that I shouldn't, I would like to try fill-in-the-blank psychedelic. Okay, great. Then we get into, did you find a facilitator that's experienced and that's going to help prepare you for this journey so that you are going in there with your eyes wide open and you know how to surrender and you know how to breathe and you know not to run away from the dragon or the entity, but to ask it, what are you here to teach me? And you know to raise your hand if you need help, and you know the facilitator is going to whoosh and get rid of any type of energy or help you process that and move on in the journey. I think that person should be allowed to do this type of work. And it shouldn't be up to me to determine whether you have enough of whatever. Oh, I'm sorry, you don't have enough, quite enough depression, quite enough anxiety, quite enough agency to be allowed to do this work. Who am I to make that determination? I can help create the container. I can help make sure there's male and female energy in the room. I can help make sure there's musicians that know how to guide using music instead of words. I can make sure there's no one there who's going to touch you inappropriately when you're in a not ordinary state. I can make sure that you have preparation up front and integration on the back end. But your journey is your journey. And I think we as a society need to get better at creating these containers where people can do this work.
Because the benefits far outweigh some of the modicum of risk, right? Like we talked about, the chemical physiological risk is really small. Risk of overdose is almost impossible. And then these other risks that we're talking about are really psycho-emotional, which largely reside within the individual, you know, body-mind matrix. And that's exactly why these psychedelics or why this type of processes are really valuable, because it helps release that energy. And you could do, you know, 20 years worth of therapy in a few weeks with a really well-run psychedelic experience that has the setting and that context and the source all really well taken care of.
We're in a world right now where there's so much moral preaching.
For sure.
We're telling women what they can and can't do with their bodies in the name of religion. Where it's giving people rules but not experiences. And then we're medically sedating adults and children every which way. We're putting people on antidepressants and mood stabilizers and anti-anxiety medication with no plan to ever get them off.
No, of course. That's not the business model.
It's not the business model. So now all of a sudden we have people who feel, if these medicines work for you, that's beautiful. And for 40-ish percent of the society-ish, they do work. But if it's not working for you, it's not you failing the medicine, it's the medicine failing you. If you don't feel alive, if you don't feel, with antidepressants, 73% sexual dysfunction.
Is that right? Oof.
Yeah, it's a huge number. And we haven't had a shift in mental health. And this isn't just mental health, this is spiritual health. But if we're going to talk about it, we combine, it can be an and. We haven't had any major breakthroughs since the antidepressant was created over 50 years ago. And people are tired of living not their authentic selves. And here is a medicine that indigenous, and going back to where we started, let's go back to just the natural medicines. Indigenous cultures have used them for thousands of years. Indigenous cultures typically don't do things that are harmful to their population and repetitively. So we have something that has thousands of years of history that's done in a group setting, in a ceremonial context, and has good results. So again, not promising any results, but the probability, the possibility is there, and the possibility is not there when antidepressants aren't working for you and you're just numbing the symptoms. You've never gotten to the root of why you don't feel alive, why you feel depressed, why you feel anxious, why you feel alone, why you don't feel this world is beautiful, why you need to hoard finances and build financial legacies along emotional holes.
Right. Okay, we're going to take a short break here from the Mark Divine Show to hear a short message from one of our partners.
You know how important sleep is. Everything just is harder when you don't sleep. Even your life expectancy decreases if you sleep poorly. But why do so many people struggle with sleep? Well, I used to struggle until I found Momenis. Momenis Sleep is a combination of three curated ingredients, magnesium, L-threonate, epigenin, and L-theanine. All of these three together help you fall asleep faster, sleep longer, and help me wake up supercharged. It's got proven ingredients, but it also doesn't have banned substances, toxic contaminants like heavy metals or pesticides, no fillers. This stuff really works. I don't get that hangover feeling in the morning from it. Whatever your goal, Momenis wants to help you achieve it. To learn more, go to livemomentous.com. Use the code DIVINE to start your new sleep journey with 20% off. That's livemomentous, livemomentous.com. Use the code DIVINE for 20% off. I've been waiting a long time for personalized healthcare and super stoked to see it here finally with Wild Health. Everyone is unique. Everyone needs personalized healthcare, just like you need personalized nutrition and exercise. So Wild Health is finally delivering the goods. They're founded by two emergency room physicians. They take a proactive and preventative approach to healthcare. They call it precision medicine. What they do is they use your genetics and biometrics and lifestyle data to determine what you need, what your body needs for nutrition, for exercise, sleep, supplementation, and more. They want you to function at your best now and in the long run. Wild Health has generously extended the Mark Divine Show listener, that's you, 20% off your entire membership costs. Use the code UNBEATABLE at wildhealth.com/unbeatable. Again, go to wildhealth.com, wildhealth.com/unbeatable, and use the code UNBEATABLE at checkout. Make this commitment to yourself. Start taking control of your health today with Wild Health. These guys are amazing. Check it out.
And now back to the show.
You know, if you want to take it this out of a socioeconomic level, like the incredible separation, anxiety, and self-preservation going on has played out to this extraordinary degree of wealth inequality that's just utterly unsustainable. And then you look at the destruction of the environment. Like when you go down this journey and it opens you up and opens your heart, it opens your heart to all beings and the interconnectedness of all things, including Mother Earth. And so you just stop any compulsive need to be destructive, right? So you begin to question all your actions, you know, who you support and how you interact with the world of commerce, right? And, you know, I think that's like this, for me, this is an important lever in global healing, because ultimately, you know, we're going to solve our world problems as a global culture through shifts in consciousness, not through WEF and UN, right?
And it's happening. I mean, we're seeing it happen.
You know, everything's in balance, as you know, right? This is like basic yoga 101. And so the more conflict and violence you see, it means there's an equal compensating balancing effect of positive energy, consciousness growth, you know, conversations like this happening. And we got a lot of violence and negativity in the world, so that must mean there's a lot of good happening in the world. So focus on the good.
Yeah, I'm finding it interesting. So I have a 20-year-old and an 18-year-old, and my wife's a teacher. And I'm finding it interesting how many conversations that we're swimming in where the lens is pointed outward, where the lens is pointed of, oh, you need to change how you address me, or you need to help me feel safe, or you can't trigger me.
That's what
me.
They're taught in school nowadays. It's awful.
It's a lot of it. Mm-hmm. And it feels like the lens is pointed in the wrong direction. That is a recipe for unhappiness.
That's right.
That I'm dependent on your behavior for me to feel good.
Mm-hmm.
In my opinion, we need to spend more time teaching people to look within, to find their strength, to find how am I going to receive however I'm acknowledged or treated, and find that confidence within and move forward. And I truly believe that this is, I mean, what an amazing time of history that we have so relatively little worries about hunger and shelter that we can start having these conversations. We can realize, okay, the lens is pointed in the wrong direction, and now we can swing it back. And now we have medicines that can assist. And we also have things that are non-medicine for the medicines are a catalyst. But when you're finished the medicines, we can move to breath work and meditation and exercise and sleep and nutrition. because it is an amazing time to be alive.
I like what you said when you're finished. And I think that's an important point. Like for me, I went into it to investigate that for the vets. I had some interesting and rewarding experiences. And then I was done. I wasn't called to do it again. But I'm grateful for the experiences. And I think that's an important point. Like, and I'd like to get your perspective. Like the people I work with in the ayahuasca space said that that's the grandmother, right? It's the female, and the ibogaine is like the masculine. They said that you shouldn't do it unless you're called, unless you feel like the plant's calling you or the medicine is calling you. What's your take on that?
I think anybody listening to this podcast 40 minutes in is feeling a calling to do something. They're looking for permission.
Right.
If you're still listening,
they would have clicked off long ago.
Yeah.
Good point.
I do think that's true, though. If it's not an enthusiastic, yes, I want to do this, then you shouldn't do it. You can be nervous, but you still, it's got to be you're driving this, not your partner, not your kids, not your parents. This is your decision.
Right. And it might be a one and done. You know, I have a friend who's a PhD therapist. She said she did it. She got called and then she had an okay, but not great experience. And she's like, that was done. I'm going to stick with meditation.
And the Greeks for more than 2,000 years had a program where once in a lifetime, you'd get to go and experience a psychedelic experience.
Is that right?
And yeah, it was the Eleusinian mystery. The beautiful, beautiful concepts. Socrates, Aristotle, Plato, Marcus Aurelius, Augustus Caesar, all these people we've heard about did it. And it was a once in a lifetime experience.
Was it like an initiation?
It was. It was a chance to become one with God. There's different theories of what exactly the psychedelic was, but it was a whole ritual that happened for over 2,000 years.
A lot of the native cultures and African cultures, you know, the initiative process includes psychedelics with obviously different ceremonies and chant and long periods of time in the wilderness. I mean, just really cool. I wish we could bring something like that back. I mean, the Navy SEALs for me were an initiation, you know, Hell Week. It's what an incredible initiation to be awake for 6 nights training around the clock. I mean, talk about hallucinations. I have more hallucinations in Hell Week than I ever have in a psychedelic experience.
You had extreme tolls on all aspects of your body, your rhythms. And for those who make it through Hell Week, what an incredible experience.
Right.
Not as ideal for those who don't make it through.
Yeah. Some of them, it's a good experience as well. So we have only a few minutes left, and I wanted to get into like uniqueness around the different medicines. MDMA, you mentioned, it's much more of like a connector, a heart opener, right? So you're not really having any kind of like hallucinogenic psychedelic experience, but you're just in a deeply connective state, right? Is that how you describe MDMA?
When I think of what's a really nice ceremony sequence, I love a day of sassafras, which is MDA or MDMA, but sassafras is a little deeper, it lasts a little bit longer, and it's a little bit more visual. But I think those heart openers where you feel incredible love for yourself and incredible love for others, it's just a great way to start a ceremonial weekend or week. Especially when you're there with fellow travelers, because it opens you up to have that really deep conversation. You've practiced breathing, you've practiced surrendering, you've gotten used to the musicians, you're ready for ceremony. And then to move from a heart opener to something like a crown opener, psilocybin, LSD, let's stick with natural, let's go with psilocybin, mushrooms for those who don't know. Now you're feeling the interconnectedness of all things. You're feeling the earth breathe. You're feeling that you are one with nature. And you can go deep, deep, deep inside your body to explore whatever it is you need to explore. And because you've practiced previously on a previous day, I think you can go deeper. Some ceremonies that I've seen combine those two into one day. And that's a really nice technique. And there's good research or some research on the combination of LSD and psilocybin or MDMA and psilocybin that it reduces the anxiety that sometimes occurs with the mushrooms. And you can substitute that day out with mescaline, maybe through San Pedro or Huachuma. I think another plant-based day is lovely. And then I love kind of the arc of the crescendo moves up to Bufo, 5-MeO-DMT.
I've never heard of that. I've heard of 5-LeO-DMT, but this Bufo is the native term for it?
Because the Bufo alvarius toad is where the venom comes from in its natural state. And then there's a synthetic version of 5-MeO-DMT as well. And this is, again, our non-duality medicine. It's the only one where there's no subject and object, and you're just part of the universe. And again, it's super short, 10 to 20 minutes. But I think for a lot of people, that's kind of the culmination of this religious or ceremonial experience that, okay, I've gotten to look backwards, I've gotten to look forward, I've gotten to look inside, and now I've gotten yet another chance to connect with my spiritual side in a way that there's really nothing like it that we know of. And you can get there. The yogis talk about getting there in non-psychedelic experiences, and people do some of the dark meditations get there, but this is a pretty consistent way to get there.
So you recommend these kind of multi-day staged experiences that curate, you know, and draw you deeper into the process?
Yeah, I think people who go in with a one ceremony experience, it's a lot of pressure on themselves. Oh, I've got to get my money's worth. It's got to all be here. What if it's not a great experience? And you have all this nervousness about the what ifs. When you have a few different medicines over a few different days, or the same medicine repeated. I mean, I'm not sure when you did ayahuasca, but oftentimes that's three ceremonies over 5 days. You're going to get another chance, because the surrendering for people like me or people who are used to some trying to hold on to control, the surrender can take a minute. And it's good not to have, I believe it's helpful, especially for newcomers, to not have to, oh, I've got to get it out of that first ceremony. I like the multi-day, multi-medicine ceremonies.
Have you had any experience with combo?
I haven't personally. I know a bunch of people who love it, but I have not personally experienced that medicine.
It's not classified as a psychedelic. It's a plant medicine, but it's not a psychedelic. It comes from a jungle frog as opposed to the desert frog, and it has over 200 peptides that they've identified, and it's applied. You put a little burn mark in your shoulder or somewhere, and it could be leg, and then apply a little bit. It's like a paste. And it instantly enters your nervous system and your blood, and it starts to like cleanse all your organs with these peptides. And then you drink a lot of water, right? Tons of water. And the whole experience is like 20 minutes. And then suddenly, you know, you just get all this heat and all these toxins start accumulating in your stomach, and then you purge it. So it's very, very uncomfortable until that last purge. Reminds me of ayahuasca in that regard, but it's a whole different experience. And then you just feel like, and a lot of people have these major emotional releases and cleansings. And so there's the psycho-emotional and physiological purification. And it's a great preparation for a psychedelic experience. A lot of the stuff that would get cleansed in the early part of an experience, especially emotional, you know, baggage that you're holding on to, you can release it through the combo, and then you can go in at a more open level to the psychedelic experience.
Have you experienced hape or rape on any of your ceremonies?
Yes.
That's a lovely non-psychedelic.
Hape is a nice, again, it's just a bunch of herbs that the shamans have put together, and there's no psychedelic. It's medicine, but it's like saying tobacco is medicine. So some of them have a little tobacco, but most of them are just herbs, all sorts of different herbs from the jungle, broken into a fine powder. It's like a snuff, and it opens up different areas, different chakras. It's a gateway to just really deep meditation.
I think it's a beautiful medicine and really grounds you into the space. I love it. Either it can be the beginning of the ceremony or the end.
We should kind of like, as we wrap up, like talk about what's technically legal and not legal. Like hape and combo are completely legal. They're not considered to be any danger. They're not a medicine in the sense of like you would consider like MDMA or psilocybin, right? But now ketamine is legal for assisted therapy, right? So I know you're involved in a company. I was sponsored by MindBloom for a while, so I did their process. And it was decent. You know, I still prefer in person, but it worked, right, to have that kind of virtual container. It was well done.
Yeah, MindBloom, New Life, Better You Care, all doing good work for access. I mean, you're talking about probably $1,200 for six sessions versus $4,000 to $6,000 for six sessions in clinic. So it just is another option. Is it as good as in person? Probably not. But is it good for those who that's the price point they need to achieve? And that's, yeah. And for convenience, it's lovely. So it's different.
Yeah. And some people don't want to be seen at a clinic or, you know, it takes a lot of time. So to do it in the privacy of your own room, as long as you've got someone there who can kind of keep an eye on things. So ketamine, now legal, its main benefit is really with anxiety and depression. Am I right? Is it? It really helps people overcome that really quickly.
Yeah, there's research on alcohol use and on eating disorders, but OCD as well. But yeah, depression, anxiety is primarily, and then there's also a whole world of pain management with ketamine, cluster headaches and migraines. But yeah, off-label for those purposes.
What do you think about microdosing ketamine?
I don't love that idea.
There's an addictive quality, a psychologically addictive. I don't think there's a physiological addictive quality to it.
Ketamine has a little bit with animal studies. Again, unlike mushrooms and LSD, where there's really no addiction potential, ketamine has a little bit. that I'd be careful of. And then I'm also be careful. I mean, I'm a fan of microdosing. I think it's a lovely scaffolding, even if the research is split. There's some research that says this is just a placebo, and there's other research that says it works, and it's kind of half and half. So it's up to you as the participant or consumer. But it's really important if you're going to microdose mushrooms that you take a break every 4 weeks. Because again, the long-term mushroom use, there's potential heart issues. And both Stamets and Dr. Fadiman say, take a break every 4 weeks for 2 weeks. So highly recommend that if you're going to microdose.
That's good gauge. Thanks for that.
The other recommendation we haven't talked about is just if for people who want their own medical intake. So let's say you're still listening to this podcast and you're wondering, well, I've got this thing, whatever this thing is, or I'm curious about me and I want to talk to somebody who has no interest in selling me anything. The Spirit Pharmacist is where Dr. Ben Malcolm is a PharmD. It's spiritpharmacist.com. That's the guy I recommend you go to. He does consults. He knows psychedelic pharmacology inside and out, and he's not trying to sell you a retreat or a ceremony or a product. He's just doing a consultation, and you can have a very open discussion. I did this. I had this experience. What do you really think is going to happen if I take XYZ psychedelic? And he'll say, oh, that this is the risk. This is the this. You might look into that. I can't recommend it highly enough.
That's a great idea. There's some movement toward MDMA being legal, right? So they're going to be using
it. Should be next year or early next year.
They've done clinical trials and I use it for vets. So next year that could be interesting. But those are the only two, right, that have been.
So ketamine today, MDMA hopefully next year, and that will be for treatment-resistant PTSD. There's still questions over what might be allowed off-label. For years, that medicine was used with couples therapy. Again, you turn off shame, blame, and guilt, and you can look at your partner and say, when you do this, that makes me feel like that. And the partner, instead of being defensive, can say, I love you. I don't want to make you feel like that. And hear you. It's beautiful, beautiful medicine. Awesome. And then psilocybin, the FDA has given it breakthrough therapy designation. Johns Hopkins is doing beautiful work with terminal cancer patients. And the psilocybin doesn't change the prognosis. They're still terminal. What it does is it changes those patients' experience as they go through that process. It changes how they feel about themselves. It changes how they feel about their mortality. And it changes how they interact with their family members. So it's beautiful for that purpose. And we're hoping that a couple years from now, psilocybin will be legalized. And then there's 309 academic institutions studying psychedelics. So there's research coming out all the time on, again, anything that has repetitive thinking behavior. So from autism, which the University of Toronto is studying, to OCD, eating disorders, alcohol use, smoking, depression, anxiety, it goes on and on. There's research after research coming out. It doesn't solve anything, and I don't believe it's a cure for anything. It's a catalyst, but I think it works for all of these different, quote, diagnoses, because at the core, it's not numbing a symptom. It's not solving a symptom. It's allowing the participant to kind of heal themselves using this medicine.
Well, anything that can get someone off of an addictive pharmacological antidepressant or whatever, anti-anxiety or ADHD, those types of things, I think is a good thing. Like, it's really not good for the business model of the big pharma, but it's good for the humans.
That's been the challenge. The MAPS has spent, I think, $140 million to get MDMA re-legalized. And that's kind of a nonprofit, donation-based, primarily model. There's just not a lot of money in the drugs, and people might do it once in their life or maybe once a year. It's not an everyday. So there's not a lot of incentive to go through the FDA process and get a new version of, you name it. And when you can go out outside and find psilocybin mushrooms growing in the forest.
Right. What's next for you, Matt? Like, what do you focus on now?
I'm really focused at this intersection of medical and spiritual. In the old days, there was just a healer. The healer is both medical and spiritual. And we've gone to where we have medical being pure science and spiritual being the realm of the clergy. And psychedelics dances in both sides. So I try to talk with spiritual world about how can we reduce risk by adopting some of the practices that are used in medical to learn from the latest knowledge of the brain and the body. And conversely, I'm talking with medical professionals almost every day about how can you adopt ceremonial practices or partner with ceremonial leaders to do this together and, again, become more effective in what you're doing. And just a simple example, we were talking about group size. A lot of the medical practices, it's one-on-one or one-on-two. It's a two people in the room on one person. That is so expensive. 20 people in the room with a facilitator and a medical and music and staff is much more affordable. And so everybody can make more money and be more effective. So I'm spending a lot of time in both of those camps talking to advocating for safe ceremonial use of psychedelics.
Amazing. Thank you so much for sharing your experiences and your wisdom in this area. It's fascinating. For me, it is. And I know that listeners are more and more attuned. And so I think that we will have a lot of people who've stuck it out to listen to this whole thing.
I hope so.
5 years ago, not so much. I probably would have been like canceled. But this is great work.
I love that. I love that the listeners hopefully are saying, maybe this is right for me to take a psychedelic, or maybe it's not. Maybe it's right for someone I love, or maybe it just changes how I vote. And we're seeing amazing things.
I wish I could get my mom and dad to do it, right?
You know, tell you what, multi-generational ceremonies. We had a couple ceremonies ago in 80, 79, and like 52. And it's just beautiful. Oh, I love seeing that. And then I've also seen 18 and 50.
Same. I've seen all three. We have a friend who did all three generations. And it was powerful. Healing, because you can heal families generationally with, you know, one powerful experience like that.
I think the How to Change Your Mind documentary on Netflix and Fantastic Fungi, also on Netflix,
Michael Pollan,
are good conversation starters. And again, we're seeing a lot of 50, 60, 70-year-old people saying, I'm ready to do this now.
Matt, where can folks learn more about your work and connect with you?
Yeah, mattzeman.com is kind of my core site. My books, Psychedelics for Everyone and Beyond the Trip, are both available really anywhere books are sold. I have an Audible version of the Psychedelics for Everyone. I'm really active on LinkedIn and respond on Instagram. And I love people booking discovery calls to talk about kind of how psychedelics might be, might work for them. So I'm open and respond.
Awesome. Well, thank you for that. And thank you for your time today. It's been really interesting.
Mark, thank you. Appreciate this discussion.
Yeah, hoo-yah. That was definitely a broad-based and fascinating discussion with Matt Zeman about psychedelics, the good and the dangers and the different, you know, things that are happening in the field of psychedelics. It's very, very interesting, and I hope you found that useful. So thanks so much, Matt. Show notes are on our website at markdevine.com, and you can find me on social media on Twitter/X at markdevine and on Instagram, Facebook at realmarkdevine. And if you're not on my newsletter distribution list, please consider subscribing. It comes out every Tuesday. It's called Divine Inspiration. I've got my blog, and which is top of my mind that week, as well as show notes from the podcast, as well as a book I'm reading, and a practice, and other really interesting things that come across my desk. So go to markdevine.com to subscribe and share it with your friends. Appreciate your reviews and ratings. It really helps. There's so many shows out there now that the only way to stay relevant or to be notices referrals, and people like to see lots of reviews and ratings. So please consider doing it wherever you listen to or watch this show. And thanks so much for being the change you want to see in the world with technologies like this podcast and my newsletter and books and sharing with other thought leaders. We can do so at scale to push back against the negativity and the violence in the world. We have to do it by changing our consciousness. And that starts with you doing your work. And so appreciate your support, and I appreciate you doing that. Till next time, I'll continue to do my work. Booyah. Bye now.
Say goodbye to your credit card rewards. Greedy corporate mega stores, led by Walmart and Target, are pushing for a law in Congress to take away your hard-earned cash back and travel points to line their pockets. The Durbin-Marshall credit card bill would enact harmful credit card routing mandates that would end credit card rewards as we know it. If you love your credit card rewards, tell your lawmakers, hands off my rewards. Tell them to oppose the Durbin-Marshall credit card bill.